from the entertainment capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, it's Midnight in the Marshaverse, starring Marsha Warfield and her two sons, Stephen Roberts and Gills Hudson, as the problem child.
Good morning. Welcome to Midnight in the Marshaverse. I say morning, but this is really the witching hour, the time when today becomes tomorrow and yesterday. And this is the time of day when magic happens, the time I love. I am one of the children of the night. Nighttime is when I chill. And so I'm so excited tonight. We have a wonderful show. I can't wait to get it started and get into it. But first, I have to introduce our adult refreshments of the evening. Tonight, we're going to revisit this White Henny. This White Henny right here. This bottle of White Henny, I believe my wife gave me when we were dating. And I'm not sure it was full even then. That was over five years ago. And you see, I still have some left. I also have a whole new bottle that I was given for my birthday by Starla Hines. And she gave me this wonderful thing. Look at this. Look at this thing. And it's got Henny in it and glasses. So if you go to a game or something, you know, you can have your, you can bring your own refreshments. See? And then you open this side. And there's the glasses. And over here is the bottle of Henny. But I didn't want to open that. I don't want to open this for ever because it's beautiful. And so I just want to keep it and drink out of the one I already have. Got me a proper glass. I've been drinking out of jelly jars and whatnot, cups. Well, now I finally got me a glass. So we're going to have a little bit of this White Henny.
Glup, 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 glup.
Not much. It's late. We just want to chill. We don't want to pass out. And once again, I am going to feature this lovely little Zenco. This thing is a Whoop Fam Zenco that she gave when she announced her cannabis line. And so I've been using it, but I found out, because if you've been watching, you know you can take this part off and drink the smoke, the vape. But I found that ain't the way to do. Come on now. There you go. Turn it on. Let it fill up. Like that. And then take a straw. That's how you do it. Yeah, that's nice. I can't do too much. It won't be no show. Anyway, now that we have that out of the way, we got our chill. We're about to hit our cruising altitude. And I want to talk about, and this is a segment I call comediosophy. It's the what makes me funny to me. And it's a lot of history, a lot of my personal history. And tonight is very special because before I bring out my guests, who I adore, and I'm so happy they're here. It's two guests tonight. First time we have two guests. But before I bring them out, I want to tell you about their father. I met him in 1976 at the Comedy Store. I think David Banks was somehow responsible for us meeting. I don't know why, but he did introduce me to Richard Pryor at the Comedy Store. He was working on, I believe, his Bicentennial Nigger album. And it was amazing to watch him because I had been such a fan for a long time. I first heard Richard Pryor, Craps After Hours, and it changed my life. The tradition of Black comedians in show business up until the 70s was that you couldn't be smarter than a white audience, or you couldn't appear to be. You had to sneak things in, and there was still baggy pants comedians. There was still, I think, Nipsey Russell and Mantan Moreland were still doing an act. And Timmy Rogers decided he was going to wear a suit on stage. He wasn't going to wear baggy pants and funny stuff. And that was new. Pygmy Markham was still doing blackface up until even after he was on Laugh-In, after they brought him on Laugh-In. And so comedians always code-switched at the very least. I think Dick Gregory didn't really code-switch, but he also didn't urbanize his material. He was more, came at it more intellectually. And then Flip Wilson, I loved. And there weren't that many women. There was only Moms Mabley. Moms spoke Moms. That was her thing. But Richard Pryor spoke my language. He spoke the language I grew up speaking, and he didn't apologize, and he didn't ask permission. He took the stage and spoke his truth in his language. That was huge. And it was huge to me. It had a huge impact on how I thought about things, how I thought about doing comedy once I started doing comedy, and doing it unapologetically, doing it like I had the right to speak in my own voice, in my dialect. And when I got to meet Richard, it was like meeting, I mean, it's one thing to meet your heroes. It's another thing to meet God. You know, I was so worshipful about him. And at the Comedy Store, when somebody like Richard Pryor shows up, everybody tries to go on before him because it's impossible to follow him, except me. I'm from Chicago. We're from a different kind of, we're from a street kind of urban show business where it don't matter who's on the stage, who was on stage before, it's your turn now, what you gonna do? And that's how I was trained, that's how I was raised. And so when they said that you want to go on before Richard, I said, no, that's his spot, let him do his thing now, follow him. Because the people who only wanted to see him, they left when he got off stage, so the people that stayed must want some more show. That was the way I looked at it. So one night I was coming off the stage. I mean, I was waiting for him to go on so I could go on after him. That was my thing. That's how I got stage time. I would follow anybody. And I was going to get a drink, and they said, Richard's introducing you. And I'm like, why Richard introduce Richard? Is it? They said, Richard's introducing you. I ran back into the room, and Richard was introducing me and telling the audience that he really wanted them to watch me do my, he thought I was funny. And that he would come back after I was done. I still want to cry when I tell that story because that was so validating. I was 23 years old, I had left my home. I didn't know anybody. I was in show business, I think. Anyway, I was 23 years old, and to have my idol acknowledge me like that was huge. And then when they got his show, Richard Pryor show, Paul Mooney said, we got a part, you wanna do it? I'm like, yeah. And I ended up doing all four, and he gave me scenes. He gave me things to do that I didn't know I could do, that I had never done, that I had never thought. I thought the people I grew up watching on TV were magic. They were a different kind of people. They must come from a different place. Nobody from where I was from had that kind of exposure and access. So for me to be given a scene with just me and Richard Pryor, and ain't no words, ain't nothing. It's, what the fuck am I gonna do? So I drove everybody crazy, and I had no idea what I was gonna do until I did it. But he trusted me. He trusted me on so many levels. If you do stand up, you know that the straight comedian has all the burden. The straight comedian is the one who drives the show. They have to drive the comedy. He trusted me to be the straight woman. And when I see young people today still looking at that, as you can see, it affects me. Either that, or that was a really big hit off that Zenko. But the truth is, he was my hero. And I got to meet his kids. They were little when they would come around. And I didn't know them well because they were kids. And I was grown. And so it was nighttime. They had to go to bed. It was only occasionally that I got to see them. But to see them now, it's just, I don't know how to explain it. You know, I don't have to, I'm a childless cat lady. I'm not a childless cat, I'm a childless black lady. And so I don't have grandkids and all that kind of stuff. So when I see my friends' kids, and they're adults, and they got kids, and they got lives, and they're doing shit, and they've done shit, and they're amazing. I get here again. I'm a blubbering fool. Who would watch a podcast to see somebody blubber and cry? Just sit and make myself cry. But they're here tonight. And so I'm gonna look forward to talking to them and hearing, catching up with them and seeing where they are now. And I hope you'll stick around and join us. But first, ta-da, we have a word from our sponsor. Tonight's show is brought to you by Aunt Karen. Aunt Karen's the bourbon seasoning, Simpler Times complete meal prep kits. Aunt Karen knows that after pulling yourself up by your bootstraps from your parents' cookie cutter tract home into a lovely mini McMansion at the end of a cul-de-sac, sometimes you long for the simpler times your grandparents described. And though you've never experienced it firsthand, those descriptions of a great Grant Woods kind of rustic life close to the land Gramps and Grams used to tell bear little resemblance to any family members' actual hardscrabble lives, the memories of those family times shared, weaving those fanciful tales of rugged individualism remain cherished moments you savor to this day. That's why Aunt Karen brings you her suburban seasoning, Simpler Time rustic meal prep kits in a can. After a long, hard day of squinting through binoculars in front of your picture window, looking for interlopers, undesirables, and ne'er-do-wells, and demand their papers, you and your family don't have time to hunt, fish, or gather. So Aunt Karen does it for you. Each kit comes with a round of bullets, canned veggies, biscuit dough, and a box of wooden matches so you can make your own batch of the backwoods possum coon or rabbit stew your ancestors say they enjoyed at those clandestine night meetings in the woods under the hood. With real chocolate-covered Brazil nuts for dessert. So load the kids and the hounds into Dad's beloved F-150 and head out for an all-American nostalgic evening of coon hunting and dinner under the stars. And remember, when it comes to what you really want, Aunt Karen knows even when you ain't sure. I met this woman. She's a grown-ass woman. I met this woman, she was a tiny girl with her parents. I think it was at the Comedy Store, I'm not sure. But anyway, I would see her occasionally as she grew up. And she's here tonight, and I just want to skip through all the stuff. You know her, you know who she is. Say hello to Rain Pryor.
Hello.
Hi. Hi, Rain. How are you doing?
I'm good.
Good.
It's good to be here. Thank you.
Getting up at What did you say? The cracker ass?
Is that ass?
Yeah. Thank you.
Only for you, though. Only for
I appreciate it. I appreciate it. You drinking and smoking or you teetotaling?
You know, I smoke before bed because I'm not as lucky as everybody that I can handle it any other time.
Okay. It's good for that. It's
and I got some coffee.
I keep me some coffee, honey. So I'm going to bring your brother out and I want to talk to you both.
Yes.
I think I met you on the set and it was just recently that I got a chance to see you again and come backstage. And then you didn't come back the second night and I was so disappointed. Anyway, but I'm going to bring him out now so I can fuss at him face to face. Please welcome Richard Pryor Jr.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm wonderful.
Good. Oh, good. What you smoking on?
I'm smoking some medicinal.
Okay.
So it's a sativa. So I'm smoking that and got my little cognac infused vodka.
There you go.
That's right.
Before we go any further, another father. Richard, do you have all your father's middle names?
No.
No.
No, I have Franklin.
That's it?
Yeah.
He didn't give you them other names. Well, how you
no. Know? So you well, you know, he didn't even name me. When I was born, my name was Rodney. Rodney Clay Pryor. And he secretly went up to the hospital and changed it to Richard.
Okay. I had no idea you were going to tell that story. That sounds fascinating.
Now,
yeah. We know your dad, right? You know it. But I'd like to know about your mom. Richard, now I know Brain's mom, but I don't know your mom.
Yeah. My mom.
I think I asked the wrong freaking question right there.
No, my mom was
amazing.
Yeah. She was amazing. And like I hear like kids talk about their mothers and not in the manner that I'm used to. And it's just very foreign to me because she was like the mother that wanted to be like Donna Reed. She wanted to be the housewife and take care of the family and all that stuff. And she pretty much did that, but with always the wrong type of man.
You know, life don't come with a script.
That's right.
So and she did pretty, well, look at you.
Yeah.
Now y'all didn't grow up together.
We did. Like we spent high school kind of off and on together and then... Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. We go for it was like
holidays.
We did like different all the holidays and then it became it was all summer. So okay. we would be around each other all during the summers and then every holiday, all the holiday, the major holidays.
Yep.
So how many kids, brothers
all together?
Yeah.
Six.
There's six.
Okay. All right.
Are we sure? Any... Yeah, the six.
Yeah, we
And you're all close or
well I think the older ones we're close and then the younger ones may be close but because we were raised together Elizabeth Rain and myself were raised together we were on the same ages so we were closer so when the other ones came they were like 20 years younger than me it was like there was nothing, you had nothing in common.
Right. No. Okay. Well, I just thought I'd ask that now, Rain.
And they're awesome people, by the way. They've grown up to be awesome people. Yeah.
I've known your mom. I met her when I first got, she's one of the few other women doing stand up at that time.
And
so I met her. Who else was Sandra Bernhardt, I think, was there.
Yeah.
And Lotus.
Elaine Boozler, yep.
Elaine was working in New York.
York.
I just talked to Elaine. I'm trying to get her on the show, and she sends love. She loves you both madly.
Oh, she's great.
She's great. Yeah.
And so, where was I talking about?
Her mother's comedy.
Your mother.
Yes, your mother. Your mother.
I forgot. But
not only that, she's also like a nuclear scientist or some
astronomer.
What the heck? Tell us about Shelley.
You know, sometimes people are just geniuses. I mean, she is. She's just really smart and teaches astronomy and is written books for the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, Caltech, and yeah, she's just smart in that way and out in her world.
But that makes me think, you know, the 70s were a hell of a time that those two people
looked at, I wasn't rain for nothing.
Got together. No. Yeah. Well, that speaks kind of blackish.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that those two people got together and loved each other.
They met at a dance club. Oh no, my mom was dancing, I think, at the Whiskey Go-Go or something.
Oh, Whiskey Go-Go.
Yeah, yeah. My dad walked in wearing a clock like Flavor Flav, and my mom asked him what the time was. No, he asked my mom what the time was. That's it. Yeah.
Okay.
And that was it. They fell in love.
It was the 70s. I use that as an excuse.
Exactly.
Just about everything. Because really, looking back, there is no excuse for most of the stuff we did. No, but coming up in the shadow of Richard Pryor, who is at the apex of his career as you were growing up, mm-hmm. Blessing or curse?
Oh, it's a two-edged sword. Yeah, it cuts on both ways.
How did it help?
Got into the club?
Yeah, got into the club. And actually, and the hindrance of it is also what I've noticed. I don't know if Rain has, not even getting opportunities for work for the particular parts or things like that, because they're like either thinking, why are you doing this? Are you just a joke, or you have no talent?
And don't even get the opportunity.
And don't even get the opportunity to prove yourself.
When did you decide you wanted to do show business?
When I came out the womb.
I was very little, and I was like, you know, seven years old.
High school, yep.
Yeah, writing plays and dancing, and yeah.
Yep. Pop locked
in. Yeah. Encouraged this? Did your parents encourage this? Or
Dad didn't encourage it with me. I think because me being the boy maybe and the oldest, and him knowing what it was like, and we were so much alike. I think he wanted me to avoid a lot of things that were Hollywood. So he didn't really push me in that, even though it was natural to me. It was already there.
And Dad gave me the rainbow colored Afro wig and was like, she's not going to go to have higher education. So she'll be a performer.
Well, you started performing very young. You were a TV star.
I was when I was younger.
Yeah.
This is totally unfair.
Shh.
Well, I've been working for weeks. I've done all the research. Why can't I have a few more days to write it? I'm tired. I'm burnt out.
You're wasting time.
Well, in my old class, term papers were easy. You'd copy a page out of the encyclopedia, and if you got the right page, you got an A.
Everybody remembers the head of the class. We used to sneak over from Night Court. Y'all shot right across the lot, and so... Yeah. We used to go over there. I used to go hang out a lot because, you know, Roz didn't have a whole lot to do.
Right. So, and what an impression, though, Roz made, just saying.
Sit in the trailer or come over and watch y'all tape. And then they told us to stop coming over. So that was that. But I remember those times fondly, and you were blossoming. Well, what did you do after that?
I went on to do some theater for many years, and then slowly just stepped out for a while of the business and everything. And especially after Dad passed away, I just was like, you know, moved out of the industry completely, and it was great. And now I'm older and feel more comfortable in myself to step back in and rejoin the forces.
That's cool. That sounds cool. Richard?
Yeah.
When did you start performing? What was your entree into?
I think, well, my stuff,
stand up?
I think me performing, I always liked doing, you know, like working on the films and things like that and on stage and stuff, but it was stand up to me was a no-win situation, because either people wanted to see someone just like Daddy, or if you did anything that was remotely like Daddy, you were stealing his material.
Yeah.
And it wasn't your own story, even though it was your own story.
Yep.
So yeah, you couldn't tell your story. Yeah.
So
you finding other ways to tell your story.
So,
you know, mine went to singing and performing on stage and doing cabaret.
Okay.
That was my release.
And it was great.
Now, Richard put his face on all his children.
He did.
Yeah.
You can't deny who you are.
No.
Did you ever want to go like, you know, incognito, my name is Debbie Jones and Bob Smith, and just shed that shadow?
You go first, Rain.
Not when I was younger. I didn't go through that until an agent said, a casting person said I should have a face job so I don't look like my dad. You know,
Jane Fonda that, or
right,
or
exactly. And so, like, and now I don't care, like, but now it's a different generation. Some people do know who Daddy is or not, so I actually feel a little more anonymous in that way. But it's also, I also am very proud of the man he was in entertainment and the paths he and the doors he opened. And you know, I mean, hello, we get to sit with Marsha Warfield.
You know, you've become you know, quite an accomplished person. If you
just, yes, she has.
Just say you have a beautiful daughter who seems to have herself all together. That in itself is an accomplishment that everybody can claim.
It's true, and she's so much better than me. Lotus is so much, you know, better and smarter, and it feels good. Like right now she's just started her junior year, and it feels really good to know I created something right and true in the world.
Yeah. Well, congratulations, Mom. Yeah. From what I see, you should be proud.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
Richard, do you have kids?
I have 20. No, I have one son.
Okay. I heard my guest say something similar once before.
I have one son and I have four grandchildren.
Oh,
well,
all right.
Yeah.
Four
different baby mamas.
Four different
Richard Pryde Jr., Grandpa Richard Pryde
Jr. How many? Okay. Are any of them named after you?
No. No. I couldn't do that because I know what it was like.
Mm-hmm.
And no, even Dad told me, you know, he was like, you know, if I knew when I was going to be famous, when I changed your name, I never would have done it.
Rodney.
Wow. Well, Richard, you and I have something in common. We both just got married.
Yes.
Yeah. I met your betrothed.
My betrothed, Curtis, my baby. Yeah. That's my, Curtis is my
right hand, left hand.
The right hand, left hand, the person that you weren't expecting in your life. You know, I was in, you know, I was in the, you know, in the, you know, the down spiral mental health and all those things, eating disorder and all these things I was going through and didn't know how to deal with any of it. And he just was there and was just quiet and silent. And just, we met, you know, on June 10th of last year. We had known each other for years on Facebook, but we met physically on June 10th of last year, a year ago. Yeah. So we got married on June 10th of this year.
Well,
and
you just got married when I saw you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just, I saw you. With
that was the honeymoon, child.
Yeah, child. Yeah.
And you did something that reminded me of Richard. Richard, a lot of people, was quiet a lot. He was very quiet. And a lot of times he could be in the club and you would never know he was there. Mm-hmm. And I noticed this with other big performers, you know, like Robin Williams. Robin could be in, and you'd never know he was there. When I first started, Donny Hathaway used to come to the club that I worked at, and he would ask me to sit with him, and I would, but he never said a word. We never said a word. He would buy me a drink and never said nothing. And you came to the show tonight, but I didn't know you came the second night. We hung out. We had a ball. Sylvia, Traymore Morrison, we was having a ball. And Andy, we would. And then, so I thought if you came to the show, you'd let me know and come back. You didn't. You just.
No, it's kind of like the way I am, because I understand what it's like being on the other side of that, and people always bombarding, or people always being intrusive, or not giving you your own personal space, not realizing that you just actually worked and may need that solitude or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So I'm just like that.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you, your family, and I told the story of your grandmother when she told me that I was family.
And that is true, too.
Yes, she it is.
Told me. And I'm going to tell that. Do we have time to tell that story? Your dad had every Sunday, Saturday, people over, and you could come over, and he'd show you his horse dog and
Ginger.
I was invited, and I knew I didn't have no business being there. I was broke as a joke. That wasn't funny. I had on some shoes that had separated at the sole, and it was flapping like that. So I had to remember to put my foot down. I was broke, but I had got invited to Richard Pryor's house, so I was going. So I went, and I'm standing in the kitchen trying to, you know, hide and be out the way. And Richard's grandmother said, what's your name? And I told her, Marcia. She said, what's your last name? And I told her, and she said, where are your people from? And I told her, and she said, I know you. I know your people. And I said, yes, ma'am. And she said, I'm not playing. I know your people. Richard, go get my book. Back then, we didn't have computers and stuff, so he had phone books too. So he went and got her phone book, and she opened it up, and she said, Warfield, look at it. And now, this ain't the real names, but Johnny Warfield, Sam Warfield, Eleanor Warfield, Lucy Warfield.
That was Mama.
Said,
that was Mama.
Them your people. And she said, them your people. Richard, you can't fuck this one. She's some king. And that's how I know we family.
Wow.
Yep.
And that's true, too, because there's a lot of Warfields in Peoria, Illinois, where I'm from, and they tell me we're related, but it's almost like a secret thing that they're not saying exactly how we're related.
Yeah.
And it's like that, you know, being on the black sheep of the family and being on that side is kind of a weird thing that you don't know a lot of the things that you probably should know.
Well, or the people,
we're gonna let that slide and just embrace the family vibe.
Yes, that's right.
We could do this all night long. I could.
It would have been nice. We're up.
We're up.
But I know y'all are up past your bedtime. And
yes. Stuff
and I appreciate you here. And I know my two sons. Well, my one son. I don't have but one son tonight, right? I have two sons. Okay. Anyway. Let me introduce. Will you sit here a minute and let them say hello? And because they're about to pee on themselves.
Yay.
Okay.
Pee on themselves, Bart.
This is my baby boy. This is my problem child. He is a unique individual, and I wouldn't have it any other way. He is just adorable. So please say hello to my baby, Skills Hudson.
Hey y'all.
Hello, Skills.
Hey.
What's up?
We all got glasses on.
See, we all old and blind.
So true.
Tell me, Skills, what you know about Rich Pryor?
Man, the goat of all goats, the pinnacle, what you try to get to just confidence wise on stage of telling your story. And then before I even got into comedy, you know, what I thought of this man in the comedy. And then when I got in the game and like we was, cause y'all do got all the same faces. You know, and I had the pleasure also when he was 19, when I was living in LA, y'all brother Mason, I had the pleasure of working with him a lot. And to just, you know, and just now meeting you guys also, and also being a fan of yours or head of the class. And I loved your fro always because see, I have a hair problem. So I've always loved
Ashe, thank you.
Ashe, speak on that.
It is a pleasure. Huh?
Speak on that.
Me?
Yeah.
On the Ashe?
Yeah.
Ashe is like, you know, the end of, like you say, Ashe to the end, like so it is, and so you speak it, and it's an energy that forms from one another, and it comes from Ifa tradition in Yoruba land, Nigeria.
And you know this how?
I know this because I am initiated into a priestess of Oshun, and I write about Ifa and African culture in Nigeria. In Yoruba land, in terms of the Ifa Isheshe community.
Okay, now this also though throws you right up against the mix that you are, the fried chicken and latkes.
And the latkes, yeah. I mean, so it does.
That has manifest into its own universe now. What's going on with you?
You know, I've become, I think, as I got older, more in touch with the more African parts of me. I'm actually 36% West African, 26 of that Nigerian. And so I've really gravitated more towards my African ancestry. And as well, part of what I've learned is also I am allowed to also honor the Jewish part of my heritage and my family as well. And I think the two for me work really well about blending. You know, in the world, we don't have to be so separated. We can come together, find commonality, and argue about it. both sides are good at arguing.
Right. You know? Yeah. But apparently you found peace in yourself with that.
I found tremendous peace in myself. And I'm not perfect. It takes, you know, it takes work.
Ain't no perfect people.
Right? Like for
ain't no perfect people. I think if the sooner we all accept that,
The better.
Understand that everybody's doing the best they can. Yeah. And most people ain't even paying no attention to you. So
right, like for real.
You know, you.
Yes.
I loved what y'all saw the debate. I mean, wait, yes. What, did y'all see the debate?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, Kamala smacked. I said, finish him, Kamala. I put that to finish him, and she did. She brought the energy of cooperation, of nurturing, of getting along. Because once you get beyond the conflicts that we're encouraged to have,
right,
you still got to have cooperation to get anything done.
Absolutely.
You know, no matter what, everybody on the assembly line, on up to the CEO and down to the janitor, got to do their job. Oh, we got problems in this whole thing. And we trust that. We know that. We get in planes. We get on boats. We get on floating fucking cities. and go on the ocean defying physics and shit because people have the capacity to come together and make miracles happen. But we don't acknowledge that. We don't cooperate. We find more value in conflict. And Kamala, one of the things while she was smacking him around and sending him to his room was stressing that sense of let's figure out, even when we disagree, how to cooperate on this thing.
Right.
So projects you're doing, Richard, what's going on?
Hi.
I'll ask you what's going on later. Right now, I introduce my oldest son. He's been working hard, slanging them jokes. Them, you know, that's got to carry that sack of jokes and get that work in. So
it's still doing it.
You know, he was just got here, but we're glad he's here. And I know he's very anxious to meet you both, but he has connection with Ukraine. So please say hello to Stephen Roberts.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, Stephen. Where are you? Hi. What do you want to say?
I just want to say hi, Rain. How are you?
Hi, Stephen.
I miss you, actually.
Was that your first gig when you worked with Rain?
Not my first gig, but it was my first really important gig. And I'm forgetting his name right now. Please forgive me. The owner of the label that she was recording.
Drozen. Was it David?
Thank you. David Drozen. Thank you. Yeah. David asked me to introduce, to host for her, and I made it on her album.
Yes, so, you did.
Yeah. So I mean, that was a huge deal.
Been there, done that, and you've stuck through it. And I'm just, for any comedian, I'm like, oh my God.
Well, that's when we met. And
that's when Marcia and I met. Rain, and we didn't actually officially meet. We were in the same room together, very close, but we didn't actually meet.
I love
it. And then she and I met a little bit long later, but we both knew that we had seen each other at your show.
I love that.
Yeah. And Richard, so nice to meet you.
You as well.
Congratulations on your marriage. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Major.
What are you finding is the best part of being married? I think I heard you say it when you were talking about Curtis just being your right hand.
Well, just the fact that you know you have someone that has your back, no matter what, they're actually there. And it's not, you don't have to look at like someone's, when are they going to run away? Or when are they going to, you know, they know it's how I am or how they are, you know, they can't be with me anymore and stuff like that. Those kind of things start going out of your head. Those things that you've been raised and taught that are a part of you, which really aren't a part of who you are.
Yeah.
It'll help you unstory your story.
Right.
So have you found peace in your... Yeah. Marriage?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the best.
Yeah, I'm looking at him here.
I can feel your voice change. Your voice change.
Yeah, but Richard, yes. We all had that in common, the three of us, coming out.
Yeah.
How was that for you? Was that
mine was pretty horrific because mine was the world finding out who I was.
Oh, wow.
Because of evil people.
Yeah, but people that were supposedly friends of mine, you know, mm-hmm. got paid, the National Enquirer and all those tabloids and out of me to the world.
Before you were ready.
Yeah. Before I was ready, yeah.
Okay.
Well, but that's now, the best time to exploit you, right? That's the best
well, time. Of course. But now, you know.
And now you can be loud and proud and live it.
Is when it's over, you know, no matter how intense it is. Okay.
Yeah. That's why people ask me, like, well, what do you not want to talk about? I'll talk about anything. And if it's something I don't want to talk about, I'm going to let you know.
All right.
So you can ask me anything you want to ask me. So.
Now what you ask me is what I answer.
Right.
But, well, Stephen.
Yes.
I know you missed the, you know, first part.
No, but I heard the whole thing. I've been here the whole time.
Oh, okay. Is there anything you want to know?
Well, you asked so many great questions. I would love to know what's next for both of you. I would like what's on the plate, what's on the docket, what's on deck, what's making your heart sing these days?
What's there for both of us, at least for Richard and I together, is we're coming out in a movie on BET December 5th called Brewster's Millions Christmas.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm telling you, they're doing it. They are.
So that's really exciting. And it's exciting that we get to work together.
Into great, great people. And this has been so interesting talking to you. I'm so honored that you stayed up to hang out with us. And you're welcome anytime. And
thank you.
Whenever, Richard. If I'm anywhere near, no matter what I'm doing, you have a seat next to me.
Thank you.
And that's, you know, that goes for you, Rain, you know, because we've hung out.
Yes.
But I'm
so. And I want to stay at Skills place because he's smoking the smoke and smoke.
Look, I was just about to say anytime you're around.
Well, we can do that too. You're welcome to come back here anytime. You happen to be up, out, you can be anywhere, in your pajamas, you can be out in a deli having breakfast. Just call and then you're welcome to drop by. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
I hope we'll stay in touch forever.
Please do. It's a pleasure meeting you guys.
Nice meeting you guys.
It was a pleasure.
All right,
nephews.
Thank you. All right, uncle.
All right.
Oh, my God. What an honor.
Oh, man.
See, wow. Wasn't that great?
Amazing.
I am so excited that happened.
Me
that,
too.
That they both came on the show, and I got to blubber and bubble, you know.
Yeah. Well, because I look at you as this tough, strong steerer all the time. So it was great to, I was like, I had to zoom into the phone. I was like, wait a minute, is that her voice changing? And then I was like, oh, she okay.
Yeah.
And then it came back again. I was like, that's.
Oh, wow. If I kept talking, I'd have kept crying. It's just, that's how important that time and that man and that whole everything was in my life. And at the time, you know, you don't think about it, but looking back.
But they also hold the grace of their fathers. They're so graceful with who their father is, and they are so open. Yeah. And they make it very easy to go there.
I think part of what makes most comedians or any comedian good, and what made Richard great is that he was a good person. Mm-hmm. No matter what you know about him or all of whatever and your opinions of this, that, and the other, in the part where it counts, he was a good person. Mm-hmm. And I think that came out in his act. You know, you knew. Yeah. He cared about things. I mean, I see people doing stick and gimmicks, but what do you care about? What is it, you know, Carlin cared about stuff. Pryor cared about stuff. Dick Gregory cared about stuff. And to me, that's one of the most essential parts of doing stand-up is having a pure heart. And I think that came across not just in Richard's performances, but in his legacy and his children. Those are good people.
Oh, they're such good people. Do that.
Okay, so we're here, and we've had a whole lot of show. But I wanted to do something a little different this week. Instead of a two-minute rant, I want a two-minute anti-rant. I want to know something good. I want you to tell me for 2 minutes something that just gets you wet.
Whoa.
I go first.
Okay. I thought you was telling us something about sticking it in the camera.
No. You said what gets me wet. Well, my lady. She gets me wet. Shout out to Stacy. She gets my chest hairs all the way down to my sternum. Yes, it just everything about that's why, when I was hearing Richard talk, that's how I feel about my lady. You know what I'm saying? We got a long distance relationship, but it's like she's here with me every day. In my heart.
I know, got the man sing it.
And she loves me for me. My chest hairs, all this. She loves me. And you know what I'm saying? And I feel it. And when you feel it from a distance.
What's her name?
Christine.
Well, thank you for, I wasn't clear. You're just your lady. But Christine, I'm happy that you're in his life. And I'm happy that you're happy, Skills. That makes
sense. Yes.
Okay, Stephen. Tell me something good.
Okay. Well,
Oh my God, Christy. I said Christine. I'm sorry, Christy.
Oh, my God.
Awesome. We can edit though, Christy.
Christy.
Say well, Christy like three pickups. Give us three pickups of the word Christy. Go.
Christy. In my heart, Christy.
I'm glad.
In my heart.
Christy
makes me happy.
Good. Christy makes me happy.
This weed is really strong, this weed.
That's your weed. I'm glad it
That's right.
Anyway.
What's the name of the weed? It's not Christine.
What's the name? It's weed. Spider-Man. I don't know what I'm smoking. So anyway, it's all right. Steven?
Yes.
Tell me something good.
Well, I would like to tell you that I have three most important men in my life, and they are in not any particular order. My little brother, Bill, my husband, Joseph, and my son, Eamon. And, you know, what I have learned from them more than anything else in my relationships with them is acceptance. Is acceptance of who and what is going on in their lives, who they are and what's going on in their lives. And I heard a quote from Tig Notaro the other day about a conversation she had with her stepfather on the day of her mother's funeral, in which he said to her, you know, I I thought that it was the child is supposed to teach the parent who they are, but it's not how it is. The parent is supposed to learn who the child is. And boy, that has stuck with me. And that comes from me, from acceptance. And you know, not only have I accepted my son for everything he is and everything he's not, but he accepted me from the day we met and loved me. And we lived in a small town in New Mexico, and he insisted on wearing gay pride shirts at the age of 10 and insisted on wearing them in this small Bible belt buckle town. And, you know, that's just a example of the what all three of them have done for me and have accepted me from the, and the only thing, the only gesture back is to accept them for everything they are and for everything they're not.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty important, man. It's another one of those things we don't talk about, how we can accept things in other people, especially that really don't have anything to do with us, but make them who they are. And so it's not about, you know, I try to tell people, you don't get to have an opinion about my identity. you just don't. And so I don't agree with your, I don't agree with your name. I don't agree with the hair coming out. What the fuck kind of stupid, I don't agree with your feet. You cannot agree with who I am. And so people who just accept you for being who you are that much easier to accept. And we have a lot fewer problems. I think what I want to say, talk about, is Kamala Harris. I would say about my boo baby, but y'all know about my boo baby. You know, I'm always going to represent her. But I've said for all the time you guys have known me that it's time for the world to be mothered. And that it's time for us to lose our identification as children of a father alone. It breeds a certain sort of mindset. It's a regimented kind of thing. Men think certain ways, and they have to have the balance of the feminine, and especially your creator is a woman. No matter who you are, no matter who you worship, we're all born of a woman, and so the reality that we are starved for mothering has become very, not only clear, it's become to a crisis point where there's going to be a shift one way or the other. And I think the Mamala is being repped and is winning. That people want that. They want to be reassured. They want to be nurtured. They want to be cared for. And for so long, we've been fussed at by contentious people, and there's something wrong and this and that. And so we don't hear. All I'm asking for is acceptance. All I'm asking for is to be treated like a person. And if we could get there, and we can get there. We've seen things shift just that quickly. But we're at the crisis point where we have to make the choice to embrace the mothering that's being offered, which is a tradition, not only it's a tradition for Black women born out of horrible times, but Black women have been in situations where they were forcibly impregnated. They were abused and impregnated. And then when the child came to be, was taken away and sold to someone else. And though she was lactating, without a child, then she was given the child of the person who abused her to raise with affection and love. And when she did, that was mocked and made fun of as the mammy, that this, but she endured that. And she is now the face of exactly what we need. Someone who will love you anyway. Somebody who cares about what's good for you. And you can just talk policy and all that other stuff. But I think the spirit of the Sapphire will save us. And I think it was on full display tonight.
Yes.
So, and she better fucking win, too.
I think, you know, that's up to her. She's doing the best she can.
Yeah.
So let's, you know, keep on keeping on and try to do what we can to help her win. We're up against the clock, y'all. We have had a ball.
Hey, wait a minute. Hey, but did y'all know out there in Ohio they're eating cats and dogs?
Yeah, right. This, man, these people are insane. They're insane. And
well, we have to. Can we just talk about this for a second?
They asked him about the immigration, and that was his response to the immigration. They let them come in the country, and they're eating the cats and dogs. How you know? I seen it on the news.
but that's, I mean, if you cannot hear the racism in that, if you cannot hear and see the racism, then you need to open your eyes, because you need to open your ears and listen. And you know what? The watchword of the night is accept. You need to accept what is presented to you. It doesn't mean that you like it or you don't do anything about it, but you have to accept that that was racist, dog whistling, key code, whatever you want to call it. That was that kind of language. Keeps him close to that contingency, and it is scary.
I think it's scary, but I also think it's not as compelling as it once was.
I agree.
I think that people are tired of
well, that. It's desperate too. It could also be seen as desperate.
It's just not, let me put it like this. It's not a good look. Nothing Trump did tonight was a good look. That he seems to be unraveling. And the whole notion that we need to have a strong bully at the helm who will beat people into submission is so off base. And I think most people are at the point where they're willing to at least listen to somebody who has another way of trying to accomplish things. Then when I was in New York, I think doing the Sherry show, it was during the time when they had those fires out of Canada, and they were a lot of smoke was coming down from Canada and was choking people to the point that they would say, go home, get out of here, go home and close all your windows and turn on your air because the smoke is too bad. Well, we were in the museum when that was happening. And it was, you could smell it all day long, but we were so into the museum itself that we tried to stick it out as long as we could until we didn't have any choice. We had to leave. Hi, I'm at the Schomburg Center for, what's the full name? Anyway, I'll get back to you with the full name. But here it's here in Harlem, and we're walking through. We just had a wonderful conversation with the people up front about museums and my whole bucket list of wanting to see all of the Black history museums in this country before too long, no matter what happens to me. Anyway, that's not the point. The point is we're here, we're starting our journey through, I guess it's a museum, but it's part of the New York Library, so it's a research center. And we're going to walk through this exhibit that they have now. And we'll get back to you in a minute. Okay. Bye. So I didn't get to go everywhere in the museum. I didn't see the whole thing. But what I did see, they had another one, and it's much smaller than a lot of the others, but they still had some very interesting displays and truths. And it's the founding story is interesting, and I would do it no justice if I tried to say it right now. Hopefully we can put the Schomburg story up while we're speaking. But it's a wonderful place, and I only was there, like I said, half time. I would love to go back and visit, and I encourage everyone to just preserve these resources that tell truth that otherwise would not get told. And we don't have to fight people so hard who are trying not to tell the story. If you tell it your damn self. And so let's tell it, and let's encourage each other to all go see it, and to all appreciate that the flag don't just wave on good days. The flag has to wave through the trying times to come out on the other side in triumph. So if you're gonna have a functioning country where everybody has the chance you claim to have promised, you're gonna have to, you know, embrace the possible, embrace the notion of humanity, and give everybody the respect for just being another human being.
First of all, it would be called 30 Years Smoking with Skills, and it would be this museum, and it would be like this long hallway with little doors, and when you would go into the rooms, they would have these exhibits of showing you, like, from when I first started smoking, situations. I have, like, tell you little stories, little backstories about a situation after I might have first smoked, or a situation when I got in trouble with smoking, and just, and you go in these different rooms, then you, and then I have like a blunt in each room, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, and just, you know, those are some of the things I would do. But yeah, I would like
famous smokers.
Oh yeah, famous people I don't smoke with.
Different paraphernalia as through the years. This is how
you did. Yes. Okay. Different strains of weed. Different strains of weed prices. Huh.
Yeah. Okay. You could call it the Hall of Flame.
There you go.
The Hall of Flame.
Hall of Flame. All right.
Hall of Flames.
Steven.
Yes.
What would your museum be?
You could call it Hall of Flame.
I can call it Hall of Flame.
The Museum of Flame.
But the hall would be really decorated. Really nice.
Okay.
Yellow.
Like, this is my Hall of Flame.
Yellow.
Yellow with flowers. If I was going to have any museum, I would have a museum of breakfast cereal.
Okay.
Just the history of cereal and every kind of cereal that's ever been made and all the different boxes. And then at the end, you get to have any cereal. There's like a wall of cereal with those things where you can just open it. You can just open it up and pour some cereal into your bowl. And then there's all the kinds of milks, and there's places to, like, there's couches with cartoons to watch, and you eat your cereal.
Can you say milks again?
Milks, different milks.
Different milks.
Different milks.
Well, that's an interesting museum. I think I would have a museum of blackface.
Ooh. I knew you were going to go serious, so I decided.
I'm not going to say, but I would have a museum of comedy, and you have to start there in America. So I would have a museum of comedy that, of black comedy, that went from minstrelsy to today. But I would do it like I was talking about before, from the backwoods part, from the reality that doesn't get enough credit, that black people made their own show business.
Right.
Out of nothing. They made a way out of no way. And so this parallel show business that launched careers, that changed American music, that just created entire genres of music and entertainment that existed on a shoestring, on just the will of people to perform. And it's a rich history that doesn't always get talked about. And so many different kinds of interactions happened on those tours and things that we don't hear. We don't hear of entertainers and Pullman porters and jazz musicians and doctors and nurses all together, because they had to be to facilitate their entree into this society. It's just so much rich history. And to do it from the side of the comedian, there's always going to be the joke that people manage to make and still perform and make a difference with as a unique form of activism. That I think needs to be celebrated and chronicled and given the whole museum treatment.
That'd be and cool. So,
that's our show for it. I've been trying to quit for a long time. But we've had so much show, I think we're overstimulated. I want to thank Rain Pryor and Richard Pryor Jr. for coming on and giving us a wonderful time. I learned so much about them. I didn't know, and I got to see them as whole people. You guys have upcoming things.
Hey, guess what I'm going to do on Friday?
What's that? Take off all your clothes and do stand-up?
I'm going to take all my clothes off except my underwear and do stand-up at the Bent Inn and Hotel.
How did I know?
You saw an advertisement.
You're going to be Bent Inn.
I'm gonna be. Oh, I wish. That's not part of the. That's not part of the show.
Maybe you'll get tips. Okay. And Skills, where you gonna be?
Well, Friday I'll be at Jimmy Kimmel's for my show at 11:30. Show those skills, and then Saturday I'll be in L.A. at the Hidden Museum.
Okay.
Performing there, and I'm gonna take pictures so I can. Because I don't know what the history of that. I just know it's called the Hidden Museum.
Okay, well, I hope you can find it. I am going next week to do another night court. I am going to take another night court next week, and then I'm going to Sacramento to the Guild Theater, where I'll be headlining a show there. And then I'll be with the First Ladies of Disco, man. Yeah, and that's
I love them so much.
I do. I love that show. I love Martha Wash. I'm trying to get Martha on the show. I just love being able to do that. So, and we'll be back here next week. And next week, I think I got a special guest for next week.
Who is it?
I can't tell you yet.
Say special guest.
Another special
SG, guest. Baby.
Hey, have I let you down yet?
No.
I've been coming with the special guest now.
Yes, you've been doing good.
This ain't bad for homemade TV.
Right?
So I think we got another special guest. But whatever, if it's just us and we just get to talk about the shows we've done so far, it'll still be a great show. And I look forward to everybody tuning in. I hope you like and share and comment and subscribe and tell all your friends and come back again and again and again. We're going to keep on doing it till we get it right and have fun along the way. So remember, our keyword this week is acceptance. So accept that we are now a part of your lives.
Just let us
bam, bam.
Let us okay. see.
All right. This I'm one of them people on the phone that can't never say goodbye.
Ah.
Yeah, one of those people. Okay, well, I'm leaving. Oh, did you go over there? Really? All right. Well, when I talk to you later, and I'll be saying goodbye. So,
I know.
In here. I love you both.
I know. I talked to you on the phone, man.
I know you have, honey, but I've listened to you too. Anyway. Love you both, and I'll see you next week.
See you next week.
Got a way no one can do it like that. Her own style, no one can wear that hat. Hey, don't you know that the queen is back? She's back, she's back. She withstands the test of time. When it comes to strength, she...